A Monday edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Welcome in. I am Doug Kazarian alongside Daniel Dopp in studio. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm limping around. I golfed on Saturday for the first time since, I want to say September, like touching a club. Some muscles are sore. Muscles I don't usually use. My hamstring, my left sort of side oblique area, whatever that's called. Tender.
I don't know what it's called. All I know is I don't have one. As long as your sports betting muscles are not hampered right now, I think we're going to be okay.
We're doing just fine. I'm going to flex said muscles coming up on this podcast. Brian Windhorst is going to join me, preview the NBA Finals, kind of react to the conference finals. We're going to glean some wisdom from here, take that, and apply some bets moving forward. Also, Preston Johnson, who you guys might know from this podcast, has been on a few times. Also, the Daily Wager. We're going to break down each series and look ahead and talk about some value spots. I already see a couple opportunities I'm going to pounce on. So what do you say we get to it, my friend?
Pay that man his money.
Time now to bring in my buddy, Brian Windhorst, who is so busy we could only track him down at an airport. Brian, thank you for taking the time, my man.
Yeah, I apologize for the group 3, group 4, group 5 boarding you're probably going to hear in the background.
Well,
crying babies, barking dogs, etc.
Everyone's boarding this money train, so we will have good information. Which airport, though? I'm dying to know.
I right now am in Omaha Airport.
Nice.
And I'm on my way toward Oakland later today.
So let's start with that Western Conference Finals. What's your reaction in terms of something you can apply moving forward, given that we know Durant has ruled out Game 1? Don't know for sure. That's according to Ramona Shelburne, by the way. In terms of just this team moving on and facing now, we know the Blazers.
Well, since this is a betting podcast, I don't think Durant will play Game 2, and I think it's gray area whether he's going to play Game 3. I really think that this is a, you know, one of the things that happened, Doug, he's had calf strains twice in the last couple of years, and both times he missed a week. And when they said mild strain, it was like, oh, he'll just miss a week. I think this one's a little bit more severe. I'm not a doctor, but that's my feel. And so when they said reevaluated in a week, that didn't mean he was going to miss a week. That was their way of playing a little bit of a game. So I do think he'll play in the series. I just don't think he'll play early in the series. Now, what does that mean for the Warriors? I don't know. They may still win. I mean, the one thing that's a factor here, I thought the Blazers, except for C.J. McCollum, who apparently has no stamina, like the stamina is turned off, like on the video game. I thought the Blazers looked very tired yesterday. I thought Lillard looked like he was totally out of gas at the end. Now, that's my perception. Doesn't mean that's 100% true. That was my perception. I thought Cantor looked worn out. Rodney Hood got hurt. And they had to immediately fly after the game to Oakland. They'll probably not even, you know, having a practice today. If it is, it's just a light walkthrough. So, they are in a real tough turnaround where they go from road to road. So while I think that the Warriors will start the series weakened, they have a rest advantage, they have a preparation advantage, and obviously they've got an emotional high advantage coming off, you know, really a huge win for them.
Yeah, and the Blazers did too. That was a nice win as well. I guess my question is sort of like dissecting what happened in Game 6 for the Warriors and Rockets. Like I think there's legitimate beef with this Draymond and KD thing, and I think the Warriors kind of rallied around the concept of not, you know, the underdog status, no KD, not the giant F you, we don't need you, but there was something, a component of that they relished. And I just wonder if that is sustainable over a long period because KD is so great. They're obviously not as good with KD, although some people think they're better, which is silly in my eyes. I just wonder if they can maintain that hunger and that excitement in a game one as opposed to the situation that presented itself Friday against the Rockets.
They've got this incredible record without him. And I was told of that. I think it's like 24-1. I don't even know what it is.
They're now 27-1 in the last 28 with Steph, but no KD.
Okay. So I was told that record on Friday. And I was told that's why the 7-point spread was an insane spread and that you should no doubt bet the Warriors. And I thought to myself, well, that's all well and good, but this situation is completely different. They're playing a road game against their biggest rival in a playoff setting where that playoff team has had some time to prepare themselves to defend against Steph. But there's no doubt in my mind that the celebration that was existing after that game, which I wrote about, was at least rooted in the reality that Durant might walk on them after the season. Is it 28% chance? Is it 58%? Is it 93%? I don't know. I mean, I could throw out some number here and make myself sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I don't. But there's no doubt to me that part of the reason that they were celebrating that was a vindication that they're still a championship level team even without him. Mm. And that's not to say that they want him to leave. That's not to say that they were celebrating saying that, you know, we're going to be just fine. But there's no doubt that that was part of it. Now, I agree that that probably won't carry forever, but I would also tell you that I think Houston is a more formidable team than Portland, especially if Hood is out and with Nurkic out. Now, again, if you were a Blazers fan, you'd probably come roaring back at me and saying nobody believes in this team, and that's fair. The Blazers had a bigger regular season record than the Rockets did. That's a very fair point. But I think that the Warriors, probably their biggest concern is their depth and, you know, how they would survive if Steph had two bad halves or Klay had two bad halves. You know, where if they needed extra scoring, where would that scoring come from? You know, they got 14 points out of Kevon Looney and a historic half from Steph Curry. What happens if he doesn't have a historic half? What happens if Kevon Looney scores 4 points and not 14? Like, I do think that they could have some struggles in putting up points, and that's something that I think the Blazers probably have to take advantage of. I think if you're Portland, you want to have high tempo. You want the score to get up because you're betting that your offensive firepower over the long haul is better than theirs with Durant out.
All of us were excited about the, you know, Warriors Rockets, but I feel like Houston laid an egg to a certain extent. Maybe that's just because the Warriors aren't getting enough credit defensively or whatever. But I'm really intrigued by this Portland series. I think they can go small. And assuming Hood comes back healthy, maybe he misses a game. I don't know. I was surprised that he went down like he did. But I feel like if they go small with the other, with Seth Curry and their regular guards, and I'm surprised Lehman hasn't played more. I feel like they can kind of send enough at Klay and Steph to make things really interesting. But I still side with the Warriors in less than six games here.
Well, I thought that the Warriors were probably rooting for the Blazers to win because they were going to have a problem dealing with Jokic. I know that there's been some stuff about DeMarcus Cousins coming back in this series. And, you know, the series takes 2 weeks. I saw him run last week in Oakland at the shoot-around. I mean, again, I am not a physical therapist, but I would not say that he was running like somebody who was close to playing. Again, this is defined close. Does that mean 7 days? Does that mean 12? Does that mean 37? I don't know. But when I heard what he said and then I saw him run, I did not have the same optimism that he has. And, you know, they were going to have an issue. Like, Bogut has really not been that impactful. And, you know, Looney would have had his hands full. So I think the fact that they can face a team that is willing to go small to match them, even if the Rockets actually had some success going small, I think that fits them better than trying to brainstorm how the hell they were going to deal with Nikola Jokic for, you know, 37 minutes in a game. So I do think that's true. I do think Jake Lehman should, you know, maybe get some more minutes here. I also think that Evan Turner, he's played okay as a playmaker, but he's completely lost all of his confidence on his shot. I think it would help if Evan Turner became more of an offensive weapon, especially if Rodney Hood is out. Rodney Hood shot 60% in this series. He was a vital offensive weapon for them. Again, if he's out too, even if he just misses a game or two, that really affects the Warriors because it increases the chance of a lower scoring game. And I think even though in the past you'd never wanted to get into a high scoring game with the Warriors, I actually think the way their situation is built right now, I think that's a pretty good idea if you could do it that way.
Interesting. That's, again, the series you're headed to for game one. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference because Milwaukee's now a 3-1 favorite, -310 in our gambling world. And that's surprising. I didn't think it'd be that high, but just given their 8-1 against the spread in this postseason, also 8-1 overall. And Toronto has just been more of a one-man show than I think many of us suspected. And in terms of the conference finals or NBA finals, so conference finals are later, Toronto ranks up there in terms of ESPN database in terms of one of the biggest underdogs that they've been last 30 years, which is surprising given that they have Kawhi Leonard and given that they're a two seed. But it's just been Milwaukee that dominant. In your eye and the people you talk to in your circles, like, what kind of chance is Toronto getting on the heels of that obviously epic shot by Kawhi?
Well, I'm not sure that I would predict the Raptors to win the series, but at that price,
yeah, they're +250.
It might be a good bet because here's one thing that people are missing when they look at Toronto and they say, well, they're a little bit one you know, headed in terms of the offense. They've been vicious defensively. And one of the things at times, not in every game, but at times, and one of the things that happened yesterday was, yes, while everybody was talking about Kawhi taking every shot, you knew what was happening. They were playing Ibaka, Gasol, and Siakam with Leonard out there, and they were this long, monstrous, defensive beast. And Lowry, who's really smart and, you know, made the great defensive play stepping in front of Embiid. If you just look at them on offense, you're discounting how good they can be on defense with that lineup. And the one place where I think that Milwaukee really struggles is in the half court late in games. They really rely on up-tempo and Giannis, trying to go in transition because he's unstoppable that way. In a slow down half court setting, which is the way we've seen so many of these games play out, where CJ McCollum comes up big and Kawhi Leonard comes up big and Kevin Durant comes up big, they don't have that shot maker because, you know, Giannis has not proven he can do it. And, you know, Middleton does it occasionally but cannot be relied on. So I think if the games are close and you get down to the end of the game and it becomes a possession game, it may swing towards Toronto. So I think the big thing for them is they're just coming off a 7-game series. Now, the one advantage they get, because of the way the schedule falls, actually, to be honest with you, because ESPN has the Western Conference Finals, and ESPN also has the lottery, so the lottery is going to be on the same day as a Western Conference Finals game. So the lottery was preset. Next year, I promise you, there will be an Eastern Conference Finals game the night of the lottery, because ESPN will have the Eastern Finals next year. But because of the circumstance that the ESPN has the West Finals, they get an extra day to rest. Toronto can take today totally off and then practice and then travel tomorrow before they have to play on Wednesday. That may help Toronto a little bit. They certainly have a little bit of a fatigue issue, but the 2 days off, I think, could really make a big difference for them going into game one.
In case people are wondering, they've each won on the other team's home court, but that was pre-Marc Gasol trade. But I agree. I don't think people talk about this Toronto. I mean, most people in the know do about the Toronto defense, but they have couple guys who've been defensive player of the years, and then their backcourt, Danny Green and Kyle Lowry, very, very strong defensive guards, in addition to all that length and size you mentioned with Gasol, Siakam, and then obviously Kawhi, just an absolute beast. And then Ibaka, too, who's not the same Ibaka, but still there. Is there any chance Golden State doesn't win at all?
I mean, to me, they're incredibly hard to beat 4-7, and I think this last series just proved it. They lost Durant in a skin-tight game, and were able to win the last 14 minutes to win. Granted, they were at home, but and then they come back and they win. I mean, you know, I've said this many times, and I'll say it again, and it just played out. They have a MVP in reserve. You know, they have an MVP in his prime that they can go to if one of the other guys is slumping or is hurt. That doesn't speak anything to even the Hall of Famer they have over there in Klay Thompson. They have a hall. This happened. We know Steph had banged his knee and, you know, got hurt in the playoffs a couple years ago. They had Durant. They have an MVP in reserve. They are the most. They have the largest margin for error of any team that I can ever remember. I can't speak to the 1960 Celtics, but I think it was a different game back then. They had the largest margin for error of any other team ever. So, even with the fact that two of their five starters are hurt, both of them all stars, one of them an MVP, they were still able to go on the road and take out arguably the second best team in the West, or at least a lot of people saw them as the second best team in the West. And when you have that reality, you say to yourself, how do you beat them 4 out of 7? I suppose they could have another injury. I suppose there could be a suspension. There could be some other, you know, fact that comes into play that changes the scenario. But, you know, you may get them once, you might get them twice. We've seen them been gotten three times, but the only time they've ever been beat four times since they've had this run together took a historic comeback by arguably one of the greatest players of all time, and they may not face that kind of monster the rest of this way.
Well, they're going to get by Portland, and the odds suggest they should at minus 550. That is certainly drastic.
I will say this, though. We are now guaranteed for the first time in 6 years for the East to have home court in the finals. Mm-hmm. So Golden State or Portland will have to start on the road. I don't know if that changes the arithmetic at all. I guess it depends on what Durant's health might be, you know.
All right, my man, and of course, we know that the Warriors have won like an NBA record, at least one road game in a million straight series. I think it's 25 at last check.
21, I think. 21 is.
Okay, well, there you go.
Might as well be 25.
It won't be this year, but all right, my man, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're super busy. Safe travels, and I'm sure we'll get you back here on the pod soon. And I should mention, that we did really well in the NBA season win totals that we did at the beginning of the season on this very pod. So kudos to you, me, and Preston.
Yeah. How about my over-under on Sacramento? I said was the guaranteed bet of under 17.
I think all of us laid an egg in our first couple picks, so we were all dead wrong on a couple. But that happens. Right. That's the beauty of doing it all.
All right.
All right, bud. Thank you again. I appreciate it.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on.
Let's bring a man who has two young children. Preston Johnson joining the podcast. How are you, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys over there?
Doing well. Let's get you some new pair of shoes for the youngsters. Let's break down these series. We just talked to Brian Windhorst. He had good insight on this. I was a little surprised how high the Milwaukee series price is, -310. I understand they've only lost one game the entire postseason, and Toronto grinded with the Sixers, but still, 310 seems high.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we even talked about it, whether it be podcasts, we've done some chalk articles, we did it on Daily Wager. Like the Toronto Raptors, I loved, you know, win the East at +275 before the playoffs started. And that's essentially the price now after they've won two series. So I know the Bucks ended up crushing Boston, but I mean, Kyrie had an all-time bad string of games. And just in general, I think maybe we were undervaluing Milwaukee to some extent, but is it really this big? And I still think, you know, when it's all said and done, that Kawhi is Kawhi Leonard, like we saw yesterday. You know, if he needs to get a win, like he can find ways to at least give Toronto a shot. So my actual true line, I had told you this before the playoffs, if Malcolm Brogdon wasn't returning, which he has returned and he's played, so things have changed a little bit, but I thought this should be close to pick, and maybe even Toronto a slight favorite. And, you know, data changes too, and through the last, you know, 9 games for Milwaukee, I've upgraded them some. But overall, you know, I have this 53%, 47%, meaning I think Milwaukee only actually, you know, moves on 53% of the time. So, like, my true line here is, like, -115. And so I already have a bunch of Toronto futures. But for me, I think there's a huge edge on the, I think, +260 or so is what's available right now to win the series. You can get +1.5 games, meaning Toronto just has to win the series, or maybe even just go 7 games. That's, like, around -115. So I think both of those are really good value when it comes to this series.
See, I don't like the -115 on +1.5 games. I mean, obviously Toronto can win a game 7, just has to get there. I know. I feel like it just needs to. I think there needs to be better payout for me to get involved there, because I think Milwaukee is a juggernaut. Brian Windhorst had some good points that Milwaukee offensively in the half court set has trouble, and that could really manifest itself when you play a good team. Like they go beatdown mode the previous two rounds, but I think it could become an issue when they get late in games against that Toronto, especially that Toronto defense. So for me, I'm not jumping on Toronto +250, but I'm not laying the 310 either. I don't have a props I like. You and I were speaking yesterday. I do lean to the over here, the over 218 in game 1.
Yeah, here's one more thing about this series, which this is something I think you might be able to relate to. This is completely subjective or narrative-based, but it absolutely feels like Toronto had to give their absolute all to win in 7 games. Kawhi, the heroics late, they end up moving on. The reason why I wouldn't really love betting Toronto right now either to win the series is it feels like game 1 is like almost a punt. I mean, that's not the correct term because they're going to try. But Milwaukee's probably winning this game 1 a really, you know, good portion of the time, and then the series price is going to get even higher. And so for me, that's one reason I don't like it as much, the way this is kind of set up, where the Bucks got a bunch of rest, wound up beating Boston in 5 games, and then Toronto had to go the distance. So for me, as one just kind of tidbit out there, is I think maybe if I were to bet Toronto series, which I'm not because I already have the future, but I would maybe just do some now and then wait to bet some after game 1, because I think, you know, a good portion of the time they are going to lose this game 1, and then the price will get better. As far as the total goes, you mentioned for game 1, yeah, 218 is too low. I have this projected at 220.8, so almost 221. It'd be a really small bet. I usually want up in this range, like 4 points of a discrepancy before I end up betting it. But, you know, 3 points off still, and I know we talked about these Toronto totals. I think now through 12 games, it's gone under 10 times, and the two that went over were by a bucket at the end of 2 blowouts against the Sixers, games 5 and 6, where the Scrubs just got like a layup down the stretch. So for me, yeah, I absolutely think there is value going to the over. I'd hope that maybe we got a little bit better, like a half or a full point better. But I don't think it's going to go that direction. And especially if game 1 ends up being a blowout, like we've talked, where the Bucks might just run them off the floor because Toronto's, just still trying to, get resurrected from that game seven win. Milwaukee might just run them off. And if that's the case, we've seen Milwaukee drop like 70 and a half before, right? Like, so I don't know. It feels like maybe first half over is a better look too. I think both teams, the offenses they're facing are by far the best that either team's also seen. And so I think it's going to be a series of defensive adjustments where earlier in the series, if you're going to bet overs, is probably better than later in the series.
Well, that's par for the course typically, I would say. And I think
usually.
That Warriors game's different because their offensive flow changed once Durant was out for game six. But in terms of this, I agree. Yeah. I think, look, it's human nature. I just think it's very hard to maintain that sort of defensive intensity. And I think the offense is going to benefit from the extra day off. I mean, they don't play till Wednesday. And I just think the Toronto's – I think you're right. I think you raised a good point the first half over. So, yeah, I think you've convinced me a little bit on that front. And you like the prop. I don't. I think I just need to get a feel. Now, each of these teams won on the other team's home court. That was pre-Gasol trade. But it was with Kawhi, was with the Greek Freak. And, let's face it, maybe Philly's a much better opponent than Boston, right? Especially the way Philly played at times. I don't think Toronto has, I don't think Toronto's dominant per se, but I think they can win 4 out of 7. They just strike me as a team that is streaky, and I think they demonstrated that against the Sixers.
Yeah, I will say the Sixers deserve some credit. They hung in there more than I anticipated at all. I thought Toronto would win in 5 or 6 games. And then they ultimately almost went to overtime at home in game seven. And a lot of it has to do, I think, with Brett Brown made some good adjustments in the series. But he also, in game seven, every starter played 40-plus minutes. Embiid had to play 45. I don't know if you saw the stat. Embiid was plus 10 in, 45 minutes and 19 seconds of play. And they lost the game. And he was plus 10. It reminded me of those LeBron games for the Cavs where he would play 45 or 46 minutes, be plus 10, and they'd lose. It was the same exact thing as Greg Monroe was a minus 9 in 1 minute. I mean, basically, Embiid needed to play all 48 minutes, and he almost did, and they almost won this game. But, the Bucks are a completely different philosophy. Mike Budenholzer, he'll play 8, 9, even sometimes 10 deep, especially with Brogdon coming back. You have Miricic, Connaughton, you have a bunch of other guys with Sterling Brown, George Hill. He's going to utilize the depth, which is what Toronto can generally match. Now, Toronto, because Philly was maxing out their starters, they only played 7 guys in their game seven. And so that's why I think they're kind of worn down. But depth-wise, I think we will see a little bit different in that regard, in the sense that, if you're going up against the Sixers starting five, which many would argue is one of the best starting fives in the NBA for 40-plus minutes, then Toronto's not going to look as good. Now you're going up against, Connaughton, George Hill, Sterling Brown, Miricic guys, for a good 15 to 20 minutes of every game. Then Toronto might have some advantages there that they can exploit. So it'll be interesting to see how the matchups end up going. I will say one thing. I saw this in 84 minutes this year where Kawhi and Giannis shared the floor. Toronto's offensive rating was 116.5, and their D rating was 105.7. So they were a plus 10.8 in the minutes that Kawhi and Giannis were actually on the floor together, because a lot of that, like you said, it was, I think Lowry missed one of the games. It was pre-Marcus Gasol trade. But when you just match up the Kawhi Giannis minutes, Toronto has actually been better in the regular season this year.
Well, the analytics definitely favor Toronto. I saw things that just irk me, but not defensively. And I thought Windhorst made a great point. If you're only assessing the Raptors offensively and some of the struggles and how they lean on Kawhi so much, it's just not rare. I mean, it's just not right. Excuse me. 50% of basketball is defense. And obviously the Raptors are exceptional at that. So, we'll table that for now. Let's switch over to the Western Conference. And just coming from our production meeting for Daily Wager, it sounds like you and I actually just picked the same prop. They laughed because I said it, and they're like, "Oh, Preston's on that too." So both of us really, really like, to the point where it's
stop hammer time
on the Warriors -1.5 games -$1.90. I just don't see how the Warriors go to 7 games with the Blazers here.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest. After the show today, I am driving around town, and I'm getting down anything I can on -500. And one, because the edge, just from a sheer numbers perspective, is really absolute here. I have them moving on in the series 91% of the time, which is over -1,000. And we're getting -500, right? So just, from that sheer discrepancy, it's a really valuable bet, in my opinion. When you actually look at it, yeah, there's some worry that Durant may not play for at least a couple of the games. I think it's a concern, obviously, but the projection is that he'll only miss 1 or 2 games from what I've seen. Now, if he missed the whole series, I don't like the bet as much, but it's still like the Warriors are still going to beat the Portland Trailblazers in a 7-game series without Durant. And we've seen where they play this, you know, free flowing, happier basketball without him sometimes anyways. And so we saw it against Houston for 5 quarters. I don't necessarily hate it. So I'm not too concerned about it to the extent that I'm not going to be like, again, driving around making this bet. But as far as, you know, limiting the juice, because a lot of people out there don't like laying minus 500, or I've seen minus 550 now some spots. That's totally fine. I think they definitely cover -1.5 often enough. This edge is big enough, even at minus 190. I think I saw minus 175 one spot. I saw minus 200 one spot. Any of those are fine. Minus 200 or better on a -1.5 series games is great. I'd just be surprised if this went 7 games, even if Durant didn't miss the entire series.
So here's my thinking. In the conference finals or NBA finals, so anything past the second round, there's only been 2 upsets in the last 30 years of this magnitude. It was 2009 when the Magic beat the Cavs and that LeBron team that had the best record in the regular season. What was the specialty of the Magic team? They had 3-point shooting, which we have since learned kind of like is the high variance, high result kind of thing. They had Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis, Jameer Nelson, and then also Dwight Howard, who, whether we like it or not, is a Hall of Famer. And at that time, he was at his peak, multiple defensive player of the year guy, you know, just an absolute menace on the boards offensively and just that offense. And then the 04 Pistons-Lakers, which, jokingly, I've heard is the first 5-game sweep in NBA history. But that team was pretty loaded, so give them credit to have Chauncey, Rasheed, and Rip, and some really good players. And the Lakers didn't have Karl Malone. They had Slava Medvedenko starting as a power forward. Sheed ate them alive, and they hated each other. And, you know, Kobe was ball-hogging when Shaq went like 38-20 or something in Game 4, I think it was, that could have tied the series, and Kobe didn't pass him the ball. It was just that locker room was a mess. So I'm not saying that, you know, they should have lost the series and that price was wrong necessarily. There were just reasons for it. I don't see reasons or angles that Portland can win this series other than Durant doesn't come back at all. And trust me, what we saw on Friday is not where we're going to get the entire series. But I also don't think I don't think Portland's as good as Houston. And I don't think Portland's going to be able to shoot Houston did. And I think Houston, by the end of the series, got familiar with the Warriors' offense. Like, they did really well against them last year in the playoffs. They did really well against them this year in the regular season. Houston hasn't solved the Warriors, but they are comfortable defending them. I don't think Portland has. Portland has played well against the Warriors in the past, but without Nurkic, and if Hood's out game one, I don't see how Portland can hang here.
Let me ask you this. You may have already seen the number, and so it might not be as surprising, but I'm going to ask you, based on the playoffs this year, what do you think, if you had to guess, Portland's net rating is, meaning, you know, how many points they're scoring on offense versus defense, just through the playoffs, through their whatever it is, 12 games?
I think it was actually really bad. Probably like 100.
So, like, no, like, their differential, their point differential.
Oh, okay.
How many points are they up against their opponent?
I'd say they're net negative. Well, no, because they won 5 games. They won 5 games. Okay,
yeah.
Including a blowout. So, in that game, too.
But you're close.
Yeah, they're probably
one. Like, they're a +1 through 12 games. They've won 2 series, but they're only +1. So, you play 12 games, and you're only beating your opponent by 1 point.
And they went 8-4.
It's usually hard
to
win those games. Yeah. So they've been a little bit fortunate, like metrics wise, like they're probably more like a 6-6 team through 12 games of the playoffs, not 8-4. And you saw Denver. I know this is just, you know, we talk matchups a lot and making adjustments in the playoffs. We already know Kanter will be exposed and Golden State will do that. But they kind of figured out the book on how to defend Dame and just, you know, throw two guys at him or one guy at him as far out as they can, 30 feet away, and make everyone else beat you. Denver, you know, Aminu and Harkless, these guys were hardly playing in that game 7, which ended up being a positive. Rodney Hood got injured, who was ended up being a positive. I think the stat going into game 7 is he was the most efficient player in isolation in the entire NBA playoffs. He was averaging 1.4 points per possession, which is like not sustainable at all. He gets injured. I'm not sure the extent of his update as far as how significant the injury was, but if he's out for the series, you know, they were struggling with depth anyways. And so I absolutely agree. Portland, granted, they won 2 series, and they deserve it. They earned it completely. 2 of the, you know, cooler games we've seen in the playoffs, period. They're beating their opponents by 1 point per game, and now they're going up against the Warriors, whether it's Durant or not. So I'm with you 100%. Values on Golden State.
Now, game one is -8, 218.5. I like the under. I think Portland looked exhausted. To your point, they've had some issues on offense. Now, I know Golden State moves the ball more and less ISO without Durant, but I'm going to guess that Durant helps them to score. So I think this number feels high. This has the makings of a, you know, like 112-98 game.
So since we actually hit record, it's moved up to 219 most spots, and it's down to 7.5 most spots. So, I mean, you actually could get an under 219 right now. I don't think – it's tough because you're right. Durant makes their offense more efficient per play, like absolutely. Defensively is actually closer to a wash than people may realize. He's a slightly net positive defensively for the Warriors, but not as drastic as people probably make you think, at least this season. But the pace is the big change. Is the Warriors do play faster when he's off the court, less isolation, and you know they're able to push it more. And you have guys like Bogut and Looney who, as soon as if they ever catch the ball on offense, are just passing it right back out. Like, you know, no dribbling, no time. They're just, it's hot potato more or less. So overall, it's kind of a wash as far as expected points, or it's actually slightly over. That's why you saw that total open. It was insane. You saw game five, the total between the Warriors and Rockets was 221.5, 222. Game six, Durant's out. It opened 210, and then it got all the way up to 215.5, and it flew over. So I think if anything, that's where I would be afraid of betting unders here. And you've already seen it open 216 up to 219 now. I wouldn't be betting under in this matchup. It would be too tough for me. I haven't run numbers on it specifically because I was waiting for an official, is Durant in or out? Assuming he's out, I actually think 219 is basically spot on. So I won't be betting over either. I would just be wary of playing under, man. It takes balls.
Okay, so let's make our picks. I'm on Golden State -1.5 games, -$1.90 if you can find that prop. I think game one's not a given, but it's really strongly favors it. You were talking about Toronto, Milwaukee, kind of a punt. I think it's I think it's more so here. And do you have a series? So you like the -500 if you can grab it, and you like the prop as well. Any like exact series outcomes or anything like that? I don't.
You know, two things. One, there was a few different reports after Portland won in Game 7 that they were celebrating at a level on the court and in the locker room that was like, quote unquote, we did it. Which goes to your point where Golden State might just run them off here in game one. Like they could be sleeping. They could be completely content with getting to the Western Conference Finals. You kind of got that sense even from just watching them play. Dame Lillard was, you know, diverting to CJ McCollum down the stretch. He was tired and worn down.
Exhausted.
I'll be very intrigued. Being in game one, I actually like Golden State too. I think I would lay it if I had to. But yeah, as far as series goes, -1.5, -200 or better. And then -500 for the series, if you're comfortable laying that kind of juice, it's really low. I think it should be about double that.
Okay, and for game one, I'm going to take a small piece on the under. I do think it dies second half. And I'm going to look to live bet Golden State because I think they could hang around. I think Portland could hang around maybe first quarter. You know, one of those kind of, you know, just the way the cookie crumbles and then just come over the top heavy. I think Warriors pull away second half, just dominate second half here. I really think this could be just a beatdown.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
And then garbage time, and, you know, then it becomes like a 15-point win. But I think they get up 20 at some point in the late third, early fourth. But so I'm gonna lay this now 7.5, and then really look to come over the top on the live line.
Yeah, there should be some opportunity there. There always is in Golden State games, it seems like, anyways. And even Portland last game, and they were down 17.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty. That's the beauty of the live betting, especially in the NBA, right? The volatility of it.
Yep.
And I wish absolutely. I had like, hey, you know, look for game two, like, because we're not going to tape another podcast for a while. So I wish I had some. I just have to see how this plays out. Durant coming back will be interesting. But I mean, Warriors money line in game one is even cheap too. Honestly, 350. Like, I don't think the spread. I think it's worth the lay of the points, but. I don't see how Portland goes into Oracle 2 days after winning a game 7 in Denver and turns around and wins this game. I just, that seems extreme.
Well, I was going to say, there was a reporter who said, because Dame Lillard is from Oakland.
Correct. That's why he went.
And he was very confident saying Lillard will win one of the games in Oakland. I'm with you. I think it would be game two if any of them. But, you know, maybe he goes off for 40 or something and does pull a crazy upset.
And we have to, I mean, like, Rodney Hood's hurt. That's a thing, right? Like, it's not as big as Durant
sadly,
being out,
yeah.
But like, I mean, that means more Evan Turner, and that's not good.
Generally not. Although he had an okay game seven, usually not good.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he played very effectively in game seven. All right, my man. Well, good catching up. I will touch base on air on the television in Daily Wager coming up in a few hours, but appreciate you taking the time.
Yep, that sounds good. Good luck. All right.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
All right, Dop. It's that time of the year. We start getting really sad. Only a handful of games left in the NBA season, and it is what it is. But a lot of good opportunities coming up. I'm really getting a good vibe here. I'm talking to a lot of people that I trust, and they all kind of agree that the Warriors do seem pretty cheap.
Pretty cheap, and they're also a pretty good team. Right. And I don't think you can go wrong there, Doug.
Confessions of a non-gambler, Dop. Do you have any things that kind of made your eyebrows raise and say, what the hell does that mean?
No. Nope, I don't think so. I mean, the only thing that raised my eyebrows was the Rockets' seemingly lack of effort against the Golden State Warriors, in which I was disappointed the Rockets didn't put together a better effort. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'll push back a little bit on that. I mean,
how
we want to say,
you, Doug?
We want to say,
like your name is on this show, please.
We find convenient narratives. I don't know if it's a lack of effort. I think sometimes there's just a lack of execution.
Totally.
And maybe because I just picked the Rockets, I'm trying to defend myself. There's something to be said about these teams folding in the moment.
Yeah.
Certain players, you know, they're I do believe in clutch and all that. Like, I do think people thrive in certain moments, and more so they don't crumble in certain moments. And there is a concern with Harden. And I also think, like, some shots just didn't go in. Like, when Klay and Steph combined for nearly 50% shooting on from three on 24 shots, and then Iguodala goes, I believe, 5 of 11.
Yeah, what are you going to do to stop
You're picking
that?
Your poison, forcing it to Iguodala, and if he's going to make those, he's going to make those. Now, I don't think it's sustainable in a 7-game series, but for one game, they got it done. The Rockets missed some opportunities. I didn't like the whistle on both teams.
Yep.
Both teams got kind of a weird whistle down the stretch, especially. But I thought the Rockets should have been up. They were up like 8 or 9, I think, at one point in the second half. They should have pushed it away. But, you know, maybe Austin Rivers misses a shot, and then Iguodala does. That's a 6-point swing, right? So it's up 12 and versus up 6. Like, things like that happen. But there was a tenacity and effort that was lacking early. I would agree with you with that. I think Mark Jackson talked about it on the broadcast. They called timeout. PJ Tucker got into some things. But, yeah, it's a weird – sports are weird. This Houston team won at Oracle earlier this year without James Harden. Warriors were full strength, and they won without Harden. And then they lose at home when the Warriors – things like that happen. I think Doc Rivers said it best. The most dangerous team in the NBA is a team without its best player.
I like that. I mean, there is something to be said, too, like you had said. With the Warriors, they have so many different options that if they have somebody that's on, you know, that team can turn so quickly, especially with their 3-point shooting, that the idea that, you know, it doesn't make a difference if they're down 12, like, they're not out of it. If they got 2 minutes left with what it is that they can do, like, I mean.
I've talked about it a bunch. The 3-pointer is 1.5 the 2-pointer, right?
Yeah.
That's the math of it. It really should be like 3 points to 4 points, right? It should be one and a third more. So that changes everything. The league's figured it out. Obviously, there's been a big shift with outside shooting. And to your point, the effort. I believe it's 80% of rebounds are below the rim. So it's all that. It's not about just height. If they're all below the rim, then the 7-footer and the 6-footer, in essence, should have the same chance. So it's effort. And I thought the Rockets had some dudes. I think guys like Tucker, Rivers, Gerald Green, like those are some dudes that like can muck it up. Like we saw with Patrick Beverley against the Warriors in the first round, but give look, they're the champs, man. You know, if it weren't for a crazy comeback by the Cavs, you'd looking at maybe a 5-peat.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just rooting for the Bucks. I'm really excited. I love seeing like,
yeah, I can't
fault
you there.
The wrong way because I'm a Michigan guy. So like, but I love seeing like no name Midwest teams that just have really good players be able to succeed because often it's so much about these. You know, the LAs and the New Yorks and the Miamis and the Chicagos. Like, I love it when a team like Milwaukee is able to put together such a fantastic team. I just want to root for them and for Giannis because I think it's an awesome story.
Well, they have probably the MVP, so keep that in mind. It's not like the little engine that could.
No, totally, 100%.
But you're right. You're a little Midwest pride there. You just hate Canada.
No, my grandmother is from Toronto.
You're just
I'm
a pure
team.
American. You hate Canada. You want to see
<That's>
them.
<true. laughs>
And well, I guess you just accepted that the Lions are never going to do it. So
they are going to do
you're
it.
You're
going
to root for the Bucks.
How dare you? Close this podcast out.
All right, my man. Good to connect, and good to have Bob Lee Bob Lee in the mix. There, it's always nice to have him.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.